Thank you so much, Dom. That was incredibly informative and really exciting to get so much stuff on the cutting edge that's coming out right now.
To learn more and to join the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance, visit forestclimatealliance.org. And to join the campaign to protect old mature forests as natural climate solutions, visit climate-forest.org and take action there.
Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic this evening is Starbucks Workers Organize. Our guests are Quentin Canta and Abigail Darling of Starbucks Workers United. Quentin recently was a lead organizer at the Walker Road Starbucks in Beaverton, and Abby is a lead organizer at the Garden Home Store. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start with the news. Starbucks has nearly 9,000 company-run locations in the U.S. with 235,000 employees and made $4 billion in profits last year, and has a long history of union busting. But over 100 Starbucks shops and counting across the country have filed for unionization elections with the National Labor Relations Board since a Buffalo, New York Starbucks shop won their union election in December. The speed of this unionization effort is breathtaking. Workers United, a service employees, that is SEIU affiliate, is behind the effort and had successfully organized other coffee shops in Buffalo in recent years. Some of the Buffalo Starbucks crew had worked at other unionized shops previously. Now shops all over the country are calling Buffalo for advice. The workers leading these organizing drives across the U.S. are largely shift supervisors whose job is to coordinate the day-to-day running of a store. And they're in their 20s, typically. Much of the workforce is that age, too, and many workers are LGBTQ. Starbucks professes progressive values, and many workers say they are organizing to hold the company to its word. Here in the Portland area, three Starbucks shops on the west side have filed for union election. Quentin and Abby, why do you think this outbreak of organizing is happening at Starbucks? What is the national mood, and what is it about this particular workforce?
Speaking for myself and other baristas that I've spoken to, I think we're fed up with the hypocrisy of a company that calls us partners in its own parlance and pats itself on the back for building a progressive workplace and good benefits, but a company that ultimately falls far short of those goals. Now, whether falling short is on purpose or by accident, you'd get different answers from different baristas. I would fall on the side of it being done on purpose. Like you mentioned, our CEO, Kevin Johnson, gave himself a 40% pay raise at the same time that Starbucks raised prices for its customers, at the same time that they're paying out millions in legal fees to Littler and Mendelson, which is a notorious union-busting law firm. And at the same time that Starbucks unilaterally chose to shrink our food and drink benefits this last year. I think ultimately there's a lot of hypocrisy on the part of corporate at Starbucks. And if we're going to be called partners, we want to reclaim that term. And we want to define that on our own terms and have more of a say in what happens at the company.
Certainly Starbucks management has been, as you've described, for a number of years, but somehow there's this wave of organizing happening now. Do you have a sense about what that's about, what's happening in the nation and or in this workforce?
Yeah, I think there are both aesthetic and obviously material reasons that it's happening right now. I think symbolically seeing a store come together and unionize during the height of the pandemic and also during the 50th year of Starbucks existence, that was a really big deal for us this last year. We were all instructed to celebrate 50 years of existence of Starbucks with customers and tell customers about that. And the company is proud of its history, and I know they won't speak on this in public. Well, I mean, I guess they have now, but they're also proud of the fact that there haven't been any unionized shops during that 50-year existence. Howard Schultz has spoken many times about how he's proud that we don't need unions at Starbucks because we treat our partners so well. But then I think materially, COVID really heightened contradictions in the workplace, and I think really helped us view ourselves as workers with common interests. And we can all see how far our employers will go in their mistreatment of us. I know I personally pay a lot of attention to the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee. I've spoken with their organizers before, and I wrote a paper about it for a university this last year, and just have really seen like the explosion of their organizing work over the past 2 years as conditions have gotten worse and worse in the workplace. Like Starbucks briefly called us and treated us like essential workers this last year, you know, frontline heroes, and has spent the rest of the pandemic trying to convince us why we don't need extra protections like reduced seating or closed lobbies, why we don't need better starting pay, why we don't need, let alone hazard pay. And like I mentioned, they took away our food and drink markout benefit this last year as well. I know I've had several conversations with my recent store manager about this, and you know, he says that Starbucks follows the facts and the figures, and if we don't feel safe in the workplace, that's not a scientific issue, that's our own issue. And I think that we're all starting to see through that, and at unionizing stores and even at stores that haven't officially filed yet, we're kind of starting to see through the lies, and we're starting to really see the company for what it is. And at its current state, it is not a company that is for its workers.
Abby, do you have any thoughts?
Absolutely. The pandemic has shown a lot of the workers the company's true colors. Everything Quentin said, being called essential workers and not being treated that way, I know that shifted a lot of people's minds. Our store specifically has had a few closure related incidents. In 2020, when we had the big wildfires on the West Coast, we had, you know, a lot of smoke in the air, and people were trying to call out of work, getting in contact with the district manager, asking to just, you know, stay home, close the store because it wasn't safe working conditions. And I know every single day of the fires, people were told no. They were told, well, if you want to stay home for your safety, like, you can call out for your shift if you want and you can stay home, but we're not going to pay you to stay home and protect yourself. I know that sparked a lot of outrage in people. And then just a few months ago, I'm not sure exactly when this was, it was in 2021, the first rain of the season came, and it turned out that we had a hole in our roof, and our roof was leaking over our bar area. And we had a proxy store manager at the time who decided it would be best to just keep the store running and put tarps up and redirect the water into the sink behind us. And coming into work that day, and I was like, why is this store open right now? I think we need to close this for partner safety. All of our baristas were having a lot of anxiety, really struggling with the situation. And the manager at the time tried to tell us if we close the store and we don't work shifts somewhere else, that we're not going to get paid for our shifts. So they just try to convince us to keep the store open, keep working. And that was rough for a lot of people who just saw, like, right there, all of the business models and money and everything being put above our safety. And it was just disgusting.
For listeners not familiar, Quentin referred to the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee, also called EWOC. That is a project of the Democratic Socialists of America and the Union UE. And this is a project that helps people unionize no matter where they work. And you can find out more at workerorganizing.org. Quentin, what are the main complaints and demands of Starbucks workers?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I think a big unifying problem for a lot of us is that, you know, within the corporate ideology of Starbucks, we are referred to as partners, but we're not treated as such. So workplace democracy obviously is a key factor for this union drive. We want a say in what's happening if we're going to be called partners. If Starbucks is going to add a menu item that is needlessly complex and slows us down during peak hours, we want a say in that before it's added to the menu, not just an outlet to vent after it's been added. We want say in policy changes and standard changes as they're happening, or in changes to our benefits as they're happening. Starbucks talks a lot about how our benefits are so great. And the public sees that. I've talked to a lot of customers who say, yeah, unions are great, everyone deserves one, but don't you have really good benefits at Starbucks? And Starbucks has done a really good job convincing people that we're well treated and that we get good benefits. The problem with any good benefits is that they're at the whim of the employer unless you have a contract. And unless we have those good benefits codified somewhere, like we've seen in the past year, they can be changed or even rescinded at any time without any input from us. Further than that, Starbucks doesn't pay us a living wage. Wages are determined by market. I have a partner at the Walker Road store who I've spoken with, who she's worked for the company for probably close to a decade now. When she started at Starbucks, she was working in Florida and making federal minimum wage. Just moving to Oregon and making the same thing, minimum wage in Oregon, her pay per hour almost doubled. And she didn't even get a raise. She was still making minimum wage. I know seniority pay is an issue for a lot of us. A lot of the organizers at both the original Buffalo store as well as all the stores that have followed have been with the company for a long time, are seeing new hires be brought in, and the new hires are making almost as much as them because over time Starbucks has stopped giving raises. Starbucks has even stopped giving bonuses. And I think just beyond that, beyond having a say in the workplace, beyond making more, I think safety is a really big issue for us right now. I know at Walker Road, we've had to beg our manager to close the lobby, to reduce seating, to go back to grab and go, where customers can still come in and order, but there's no reason for them to be taking their mask off because there's no seating. There's no consumption of food or drink inside. And after begging for months, we had 6 chairs and 1 table taken out of our lobby. Seating is essentially still the same, And the whole time our manager is telling us that the facts and the figures are saying that we don't need to limit seating because we're not at risk. And then you look at shops that are unionizing, and Garden Home, for example, had been asking to go back to grab and go. It was always rejected. And then as soon as they asked, after announcing their union drive, it was given to them right away. So Abby can probably speak a little more to like what we've already seen Starbucks cave on, and you know, ultimately like what we can get, the demands that we can win even before signing a contract.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. We're speaking with Quentin Canta and Abigail Adarling of Starbucks Workers United.
So what has been the response of Starbucks management to this national wave, and in particular, your stores, the two stores that you've come out of?
I know that we have seen a lot more of upper management in our stores in the past few weeks who we just hadn't seen before. I mean, us, we have our district manager in there almost every day now. We just started having two-on-ones last week after our manager told us that we would not have two-on-ones. They brought in an outside district manager and started having conversations with baristas to update them on the new isolation guidelines and on the new seating changes. But then when they actually had those conversations, it was very clearly anti-union. They did talk about the isolation guidelines, but then they just wanted to ask us our stories, ask how they could support us. They were trying to relate to us, like get on our good side and, you know, really hear the partners. And I know in my store, Garden Home, we all saw right through it. It was kind of funny trying to watch them do these interviews with everyone in the store. But yeah, that's been like our biggest, we've just had a lot of managers in the store around us.
From the very beginning, Starbucks doesn't pretend to be ambivalent on the issue of unionizing. They've been very explicit in telling us we don't want you to have a union. Rossanne Williams, who is the vice president of North American operations, I think, she released a letter to partners this last fall, in which she said, from the beginning, we've been clear in our conviction that we don't want you to have a union. We don't think you need one. And so they haven't even been hiding the fact of what they're doing. It doesn't have to be subtle what they're doing, because everybody knows what their stance is on it. You know, we saw that they were really aggressive in their union bus strategies in Buffalo at the onset of the union drive, really aggressive in Arizona, where we're still waiting to see ballots counted. For a while, they were a lot more subtle in their response. I know that's been the case at Walker Road. But then in recent weeks, we've seen the Memphis 7 were fired from their positions, and Starbucks took a national stance on that as well. So along with our weekly update, we'll get letters from whether it's Rossanne or Kevin Johnson, our CEO, or any other number of corporate goons. They'll send letters to us. They sent us a letter about the Memphis 7, and they said, we know there's been a lot of talk in the media about these workers who were separated from their time at Starbucks. And they took a stance and they said they did that because those workers were violating company policies. But then conveniently, out of the respect of privacy for these now former partners, wouldn't go into details about it. So Starbucks isn't trying to be subtle in what they're doing at the national level. And in fact, are being quite explicit about what they're doing. And so it's interesting to kind of see the difference in direction from a national and local level. I think they just maybe expect that none of us pay attention to what's happening at the national level, because then in our stores, they're assuring us we won't be union busting. Actually, we're not going to hold two-on-one captive audience meetings. We're not going to post anti-union materials in the store. We want everybody to have a voice. Yeah, I think it's another really interesting contradiction that I think a lot of us are starting to recognize.
Have your coworkers recognized those instances of union busting nationally and locally? And when they've come up, how have you and your coworkers resisted those union busting tactics. Maybe Abby?
Yeah, at my store, it's been really nice because we're all on the same page about everything. I know we had some baristas concerned with the two-on-one. They were like a little nervous, intimidated by having that conversation. And we tried to support each other. Like I joined a two-on-one with a barista, so we did like a two-on-two. That way we could kind of both like stand up and say what we wanted to say back and not let them just lie about everything that's going on around us. And it was nice that we like felt that solidarity with each other and felt comfortable enough to do that together. Jaden and I, when we were organizing at the beginning, we used the Buffalo store to kind of gauge everybody. And we're like, hey, do you see what's happening in Buffalo? Like, do you see what Starbucks is doing to them? And it was actually like their union busting tactics that kind of inspired like a lot of people to want to vote for a union. They were like, it's really gross that Starbucks would do this to workers just trying to do something simple and organize. So I think their intent did not really come across. I think it kind of backlashed on them a little bit.
Would you say that was true about the Memphis 7 being fired? Did you think that backfired on them?
Oh, I think that definitely backfired on them as well. I know in our stores, it sparked a lot of outrage. You know, like our baristas were concerned for us, the organizing committee, and they're like, I don't want that to happen to you. And I was like, we can't get nervous about this. Like, we all have to stand together and stay a team. And I think like seeing the solidarity across the country was really helpful for a lot of our people, because we just know like we're protected, we feel supported and safe by our union.
So what has been the role of community support here in the Portland area and support in giving workers confidence and pushing back these management tactics?
So we've seen different responses to community support at different locations. I worked at the Walker Road store until recently. Myself and my co-organizer there started our unionizing efforts, printed cards together, canvassed people together. Due to conflict within our organizing committee, community support actually had the opposite effect as intended on our workers. I don't think that my coworkers were really ready for conflict or the contradictions that community support would expose in our workplace. And between us and our store manager, a lot of people at Walker Road have been there for several years and are on really good terms with the store manager. I think there's a lot of cognitive dissonance trusting your relationship with your store manager and then seeing maybe not what he's capable of, but what the company will ask him to do and what he will follow along and do in that role as store manager during a union drive. I always stressed the question, what is so unique about our store manager? If every other store manager in the country is being instructed to union bust, why would our store be the one exception? And so we had a lot of disagreements during the first week of being public over whether or not certain things were union busting. I started a document to track unfair labor practices as they were happening and got a lot of pushback from people on my committee who thought that maybe I was stretching some of the things that were happening. You know, they were like, our store manager insisted that there wouldn't be union busting, and so we believe him that there's not going to be. We believe it's not happening right now. However, the workers at the Jenkins store and Garden Home, as Abby can specifically speak to, have really supported and benefited from the community solidarity work that we've seen. I think that ultimately this is a good lesson for organizers and for everyone in what a worker-driven campaign means. And that, you know, as labor advocates, we really need to listen to what rank and file workers are asking for and what they need, and that the needs of the organizing committee at Walker Road are not the same as the needs at other stores. the same actions that might build momentum and solidarity at the Garden Home Store sowed distrust and conflict at the Walker Road Store.
Yeah, can you talk about the specifics of what that community solidarity looked like?
We absolutely love getting the mobile orders that say Union Yes, Union Strong. Just having people come in and order and just like talk to us, and then we ask their name and they say Union Yes. It's been really nice for us to have those conversations, and it just feels like what we'll have. Let's see, we've had a lot of like DSA members come through recently. We had a rally come through the store the other day, and it was probably like 10 to 12 people who all used the names Union Strong, Union Yes, and our entire store, like all of the baristas behind the bar, were just so happy. We were all talking to people, like answering questions, hearing about other people's stories, like in their unions. It's just been really cool to feel that support and like know that people have our back in the area, and like people actually do care about like what we're going through. I know like we've been wanting to, or with the picket coming up for the Oregon nurses, I know we want to join in with that and show solidarity for them. And yeah, just having the community support has been great for us.
That is wonderful. So assuming you win your elections, how do you hope to win a first contract? And what do you expect Starbucks management will do?
Yeah. So I think what we're seeing right now, so facts on the ground right now, two stores have won their union elections and are represented by Workers United. They're both in Buffalo, and they're both bargaining with Starbucks right now. Well, they're not bargaining with Starbucks. They're bargaining with Littler and Mendelsohn lawyers. I'm sure none of them have spoken to anybody at Starbucks about it. But what we've seen over the past week is that in internal messaging, Starbucks is misrepresenting what the union is pushing for. And has even misled partners and said that the union is not pushing for any economic gains for partners. And in what I think was a really brilliant strategic move, on all of our social media channels, Starbucks Workers United published what their demands were in contract negotiations. So they laid out clearly and explicitly what they're pushing for, how it would help partners. And I think that really helped push back on Starbucks's narrative that the union is just full of empty promises and wouldn't do anything for the workers. Because I think ultimately by publishing what we're pushing for in contract negotiations, it shifts the burden back onto Starbucks. And so now Starbucks can't tell baristas, you might be worse off if you unionize, because as organizers, we can point to exactly what the bargaining committees are pushing for and say, there's no reason we can't have these things. The only reason that we can't have these things is if Starbucks refuses to negotiate with us. It's not legal, it's not ethical, and it certainly doesn't help Starbucks if we're able to successfully show partners that that's what's happening. And so I think in the case of stores that have already won their elections, they're already fighting for partners everywhere. They're not just looking to improve material conditions within their own store, but by publishing their demands and helping organizers across the country, they're fighting for all of us and ultimately helping all of us.
But the workers there actually went on strike for COVID safety, and they had a policy changed company-wide. So in January or February, we saw the isolation guidelines kind of switch to where if anyone had been exposed to COVID within the store, you had to isolate for 5 days, when before, if you had been vaccinated, you didn't need to isolate. So I know that like those Buffalo partners already won something for the company. They got us those isolation times, and that was amazing.
Tell us, how can our listeners support your efforts, and how can they keep informed about Starbucks workers unionizing?
If listeners want to show up in person in our stores, we would absolutely love that. We would love to make you some coffee and talk about unions.
Should we order with the name Union Yes or Union Strong?
We absolutely love that. I think you can change it in your mobile app pretty easily if you want a mobile order still, or if you say it at the register, we'll be really happy to. There is the SB Workers United Instagram. They post constantly about any updates with the union elections. I know they're pretty big on Twitter too, and they post like daily who is filing across the country because there's new petitions every day. So that's how I've been staying updated at least.
That wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We've been talking with Quentin Canta and Abigail Darling of Starbucks Workers United. I'm Jamie Partridge here with my co-host Laura Wadland. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Portland. I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded and we need your support to get there. So just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44-321. Thanks, and now on for today's show.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad,